When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning. This is Bennett Kelly broadcasting live from the Internet Law Center here in downtown Santa Monica, the heart of Silicon Beach. Please be seated. We got a great show for you today. And this is our 320th show, and we must have easily done 20 or more shows over the past 8 years covering the topic of net neutrality. It has been a hot issue that we've come back to over and over again. And the battle keeps flipping from being the net neutrality side winning to the anti-net neutrality forces winning. And right now it's somewhat in limbo. I'm reminded of the Al Gore quote, you win some, you lose some, and then there's that middle category. And maybe that's where the battle stands right now. But with us, we're lucky to have Guara Floria. He's the policy counsel with Free Press, who's been a great show, great friend of the show. And he's going to walk us through where we stand, because actually there are a lot of developments that have been happening in the last few weeks. And tomorrow is an internet-wide day of action to lobby Congress. And we'll tell you what that's all about in a little bit. But first, I want to welcome Guara. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
And so this has been a long and winding road, definitely, especially for those of you who have been involved in this fight. And as you mentioned, some of them for over your New York camp for over a decade. Tell us a little bit about what you do and what Free Press does.
Sure. So a little bit about me. As you said, policy counsel here at Free Press. We've been working on a lot of internet issues, certainly net neutrality, for more than a decade over here. So I've been working on that litigation, the fight in Congress, and then other internet issues like internet privacy, mergers, really trying to protect the open internet over here. And if it affects that, we're in the fight.
And Free Press, as I mentioned, has been a great friend of the show. There are various people from them on the show multiple times, primarily to talk about this one issue, and that's net neutrality. And there's information about Guara and a net neutrality timeline in our show notes, which are at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com. And as always, follow us on Twitter at cyberlawradio. And so I guess let's start with the good news. In 2015, the Obama FTC with Chairman Wheeler, they adopted an open internet order that became what we currently refer to as the net neutrality order. And that was affirmed in 2016 by the D.C. Circuit.
And that's correct, yeah.
And so there was an attempt, even though that order had been repealed in essence, by the 2017 Trump FCC led by Ajit Pai, the chairman, to adopt what is known, what they call the Restore Internet Freedom Order, which not only repeals net neutrality, but actually authorizes some of the conduct that had previously been prohibited. Despite that, there was a movement to actually try to get the Supreme Court to reverse the 2016 D.C. Circuit decision upholding the Obama-era rules. And we have a little bit of news about that. Why don't you tell us what happened?
Yeah, sure. So recently, cert was denied at the Supreme Court to vacate the D.C. Circuit case that affirmed the 2015 rules. So this was a move by the FCC to kind of gut the precedential value of a case affirming the rules. And so if that had gone through, it would remain was one of the pillars of the case to restore the 2015 rules would have been, you know, cut out from under us. And fortunately, the court decided not to grant cert. And so the decision stands. So we've got two good D.C. Circuit cases that are still on the books affirming the 2015 order and saying that net neutrality is perfectly legal, fits squarely within the Communications Act, and, you know, it does what it says it does, protects net neutrality and classifies internet access providers as telecommunications services. Interestingly, Roberts and Kavanaugh were recused for two different reasons. Roberts has stock in Time Warner, I believe, and Kavanaugh actually wrote the dissent at the D.C. Circuit for not upholding the 2015 order. So he's also recused himself from the issue on granting cert. So we're not sure how that's going to shake out when and if this line of cases gets to the Supreme Court again. But those two recusals are still kind of out there.
And so that means that the 2016 decision is still precedent in deciding the current lawsuits over the repeal order.
Yes, that's correct. And so those cases are important. It's we at Free Press and other organizations in that case laid out the rationale for net neutrality, talked about why the FCC was right in granting, in classifying broadband access providers as telecommunication services. And that's really the argument that the current FCC has said is not something that the FCC has even the power to do. So, we've got a good holding from the DC Circuit kind of directly contradicting the thinking of the current FCC. And so that decision is still on the books, and they're going to have to contend with that as this case makes it through the courts.
And another thing that has happened, and I guess these are kind of the side battles to the main battle, but let's kind of deal with them sequentially, is a number of states have passed laws to implement net neutrality within their own states. And with California's enactment and what Governor Brown signed on September 30th was called the gold standard of those laws. And so California was kind of the lead in that area, plus a number of state governors used their executive authority in state purchasing power to require that states only purchase from providers who adhere to net neutrality principles. Can you tell us a little bit about that movement?
Sure. I mean, we're actually quite pleased to see that individuals across the country are leaning on their elected representatives, whether that's in their state legislatures, whether that's with their governors, or and petitioning their federal legislators here in D.C. as well, to institute these rules and however they can. So whether that, as you said, means making sure that contracts in the state abide by net neutrality rules, no blocking, no throttling, no pay prioritization, in contracts with the state to kind of use the market power of the state governments to ensure net neutrality that way, or like in California's case, just passing and signing very similar rules to the 2015 order at the state level. But as you said, the Trump Justice Department came down with a hammer and is suing California. Well, it plans to sue California to wipe away those rules even at the state level.
There's actually they filed suit the day it was signed.
So, they wasted no time in getting there.
Let me think about that for a second. Okay, we'll see. But I guess, you know, for those unfamiliar and not involved in the day-to-day battle here, how does a state regulate net neutrality?
Sure. So states have public utilities commissions, and so they have to grant easements to telecommunications providers. There's a lot of obviously the Communications Act is a federal law, but it does leave, contemplates room for there to be state action on the margins for how states regulate their telecommunication services. And in the absence of a federal law, which is a federal rule, which is the logic behind the FCC's repeal of net neutrality, that it has no authority whatsoever to regulate what used to be classified as telecommunication services, there's really ample room for the states to assert their own authority to protect those rules for those companies as they do business in those states. So, in the absence of a federal rule, it kind of does make sense that the states are there to protect their citizens from the harms that some of these providers, AT&T, Comcast, et cetera, want to do to their fundamental right to connect and communicate on an open and free internet.
You raise an interesting point, because there's a kind of a double-edged sword to the FCC's repeal order, and by basically abandoning the space, on one hand they're abandoning the space, on the other hand they're saying we alone can regulate, so we're preempting state law, and the two seem inconsistent.
The irony,
federal authority preempt something if it's not regulating?
That's entirely correct. The irony is not lost on us at all. The FCC claims it both has no authority to regulate ISPs at all, so they've completely vacated the regulatory space, and they are also asserting that no state may step in and take action in the telecommunications internet space either. So it is, I think, fundamentally contradictory, and that's one of the avenues of attack that we're going to be taking to the court as well.
But going back to the question of how would a state regulate, in terms of requiring states to adhere to net neutrality principles or only doing business with ISPs that meet these standards, are there ISPs that meet these standards?
There are actually small ISPs, other people that are, kind of afraid of the big players in the market that have committed publicly to adhering to these net neutrality rules. Other big players, Comcast, AT&T, as soon as the 2017 order, the repeal was passed, started taking out their disclosures on their websites, committing to upholding a lot of these rules, like pay prioritization. So,
right.
There are ISPs, the smaller players in the market, I think, really, they need to fight for customers. And I think one way they're doing that is by publicly committing to following the rules, whether or not in the absence of a federal rule. But the big players, they see money to be made by not following these rules, by prioritizing content, by throttling, by blocking. And so, I think they've removed their public commitment to abiding even to the spirit of the rule.
I mean, in California, there was that big controversy, I believe it was with Verizon, throttling the first responders and one of the wildfires.
That is true. So during the emergency, California throttled internet access of first responders battling the wildfire while it was happening. And so in the absence of a federal oversight body, there's no lever to pull to investigate those claims and to punish Verizon if they actually, to follow through, investigate and regulate them. So, kind of shows the danger in the absence of an oversight body. This is the kind of stuff that the ISPs are, kind of gladly do.
And that throttling would be permitted under the repeal order as long as they disclose in some form that they do this.
That is correct. So Verizon says this was just part of the contract that they had with those firefighters. So, you know, in some way it's disclosed. The repeal order only kept the very barest minimum of transparency rules. Otherwise, you know, sky's the limit for what these ISPs are allowed to do, as long as they, in some form, and file with the SEC, tell you that that's what they're doing. So I think it's a pretty, you know, dangerous time for the open internet. It's free reign for these ISPs to act in that way, other ways, and kind of, you know, play around with people's internet traffic.
So Verizon said, you know, we may, they probably use some euphemism like, what is it, network management? They can throttle people trying to save people's lives.
Yes, and it is. So that's the situation we're in right now. Verizon has the legal ability to do this, and now there's no real oversight of what ISPs are allowed to do. And obviously the first responder, you know, public emergency issue is real, and it's kind of one of the effects that we're seeing by not having these rules on the books.
Talk about a bad PR, your firestorm, no pun intended. But so getting back to the state efforts, California, as we mentioned, was sued by the Justice Department, but they've reached a kind of an agreement to stay that battle pending resolution of the battle in D.C. Circuit over the repeal order. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the California and the Justice Department came to an agreement to wait until the outcome of the D.C. Circuit case is decided to then, you know, to relitigate, to then actually litigate the California case. So, you know, there's a possibility when we win, that the California issue will become moot because the rules will be restored at the federal level.
And but part of that agreement is California is not enforcing its law.
Yes, that is true. So there, but you know, the case is going to get heard early 2019. So, you know, depending on how things go, we could have a resolution at least of the D.C. Circuit by you know 6 months from now or so.
So one other track that you know, is kind of well leading up to the big showdown in the D.C. Circuit, but one of the other battles going on in the multiple fronts of this war is in Congress. And could you explain the Congressional Review Act and where we stand on that?
Sure. So the Congressional Review Act is actually one of the reforms that Newt Gingrich put in place back in 1995, I believe, Contract with America. And so what it is a very strange mechanism that allows Congress to overturn, not through an ordinary law, but through this kind of weird procedural mechanism called the Congressional Review Act. So instead of passing new law, they can just vote on a review of a regulation that was recently promulgated, and then just vote to overturn it and restore the status quo ante. So in this case, the Congressional Review Act will overturn the repeal of the net neutrality rules, thereby restoring the world to what it was the day before the FCC voted on them, meaning that the 2015 rules go back into effect.
Does that require a presidential signature?
It does. It does. It has to be signed. So before this Congress, it's only been used once. As soon as you know the Trump administration came into power, the Congress passed, I think maybe half a dozen or more, undoing a lot of Obama era regulations, and so kind of using that same tool to restore one of those regulations.
And there's an important provision of this Congressional Review Act is that once that's if it succeeds, the agency is prohibited from issuing further regulations on that issue ever. Is that correct?
That is true. So it would freeze in place. It's the one that provision actually hasn't been tested, but our the current understanding of how that works is it would freeze in place those net neutrality rules passed in 2015, which you know frankly they were exactly you know what the advocacy community and was the proper definition of internet service providers as telecommunication services. So if that is frozen in place and future FCCs kind of can't play around with it, that's not a wholly bad outcome.
And so right now, there was a vote in the Senate in May of this year.
That is correct.
Where to basically reverse the repeal order. And what was the result of that vote?
No, so it passed. The Republicans, we actually did get some Republican support. So all Democrats and some Republicans passed it. We got, you know, over the CRA mechanism actually doesn't have a filibuster. So really we just needed 50 plus one in the Senate to pass. And so that's how it got out of the Senate. And now we're waiting in the House of Representatives to see if we can get a majority there to restore the rules and send it to the president for signature.
And how many votes do you have now, do you think?
Right now we're at 177, so it's 218 to pass. There are 194 Democrats. We've got 19 that are not yet on, so we're still working on that. Okay. And then we have one Republican, Kaufman, who was voted out in November, but you know, this Congress is still there, and they've got until December 10th to get this done. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, that's why there's a big rally tomorrow to see this through before the next Congress comes into power.
So if you get the 19 Dems and Kaufman, how many short are you?
We are, so that would be 19 plus. We need a handful of Republicans, let me put it that way.
Okay. And how many do you need total?
We have 218 to pass.
Right. So you right now you're at
177. There's 19
right,
Dems
so,
left.
So yeah. You're 41. You need 41 new votes. And that's just, procedurally, you have to do a discharge petition, is it? Since the leadership's not going to bring this up for a vote.
That's correct. So that 177 number actually reflects the number on the discharge petition. So once we get a majority of the House, that petition can be sent to the floor and voted on.
And interesting.
So it bypasses leadership from being able to block it, which I think that is the disposition of the leadership now, that they don't want to see this voted on.
And presumably, you know, if you have that many people on a discharge position, they'll vote to.
Yes. It would be quite strange to sign on to a discharge petition and then not pass the underlying legislation.
So let's assume
votes are equivalent.
Let's assume you succeed in passing it. Is there any indication that the Trump administration will sign this?
I think with the Trump administration, making predictions is really, really difficult. And I think, you know, if something gets out, you know, these are two Republican-controlled chambers. So if it makes it out, you know, I'd say there's a chance that he'll sign.
Okay, that's being an optimist. I do recall him not being a fan of net neutrality during the campaign, but I just don't know what. He hasn't made any really public pronouncements since then. But how confident are you that you can get the votes by December 10th?
I think we're fighting. You know, I think that there's some new people in special elections that were elected to Congress who are there now who can sign the discharge petition. That's why we're, as I said, rallying tomorrow. We've got a lot of internet sites fighting with us. I think hopefully we're going to see some movement.
And are there any, you know, I remember in 2010, a lot of the Democrats who actually came out as early supporters of net neutrality lost. How did the net neutrality supporters do election day this time?
Oh, I really, really well, actually. I think a lot of, you can actually see a lot of Democrats used it as a campaign issue. There's somewhere around 62 new Democrats, and of those, we did a little calculation, about 70% of those publicly stated their support for net neutrality, either in their campaign platforms or on their websites, or just said it in the course of campaigning. I think, you know, net neutrality voters are a real thing. The public is overwhelmingly in support of these rules, and certainly they're popular with young people, and it's no surprise in an election where a lot of, you know, new faces were elected to Congress, those people are quite well attuned to internet issues and what the public wants in that regard.
Well, I'm quite well attuned to my advertisers, and so we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more on net neutrality after these messages. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report, only on webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Celebrating the best in online advertising, the Web Marketing Association presents the 2018 Internet Advertising Competition Awards. Submit your banner ads, email ads, rich media, online newsletters, websites, and social media campaigns now by going to www.iacaward.org. Deadline for entries is January 31st, 2019. All winners will have their entry highlighted on the Internet Advertising Competition website, as well as receive a handsome trophy to display or a personalized certificate of achievement. Be honored among your online advertising peers by submitting your entry into the Web Marketing Association's 2018 Internet Advertising Competition Awards. Go to www.iacaward.org now.
Radio's virtual Autobahn.
WebmasterRadio.fm, moving at the speed of light. WebmasterRadio.fm, we're everywhere.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back, and we're talking with Gaurav Laroia about the current state of affairs on net neutrality. And while it may not have been on the front page every day the last few months, it definitely is about to heat up. And so we were just talking about the current battle in Congress to repeal or reverse the FCC's repeal order. And tomorrow there is an internet-wide day of action calling that's going to invite people to contact Congress to get those remaining votes needed to pass the resolution to reverse the net neutrality repeal. Can you tell us a little bit about that internet-wide day of action? I'm assuming Free Press is part of that.
Sure, yes, we are. If you go to Battle for the Net, you'll, I believe it's .net, you'll see actions you can take. People have signed petitions, called their members, are encouraging them to do so again, to see to get the remaining people on to, as you said, to do a repeal of the repeal of the net neutrality rules. So we've got to get that done by December 10th. And so this is one of our last big pushes to see that the CRA pass.
Who are some of the people behind this?
A lot of the groups that have been interested in net neutrality for years now, certainly Free Press, Fight for the Future. There's internet companies are behind it too. We've got, Tumblr, some VPNs, the popular blog Boing Boing. I think, over the past couple of years, lots of internet companies, certainly, and millions of ordinary people have gotten out there and contacted their members of Congress, contacted the FCC to make sure that these rules don't go away. And so, we're appealing on those allies again to get out there tomorrow and, let's see those congressional phones ring off the hook and make sure they know that the public is behind seeing these rules restored.
And there's a website called deadlinefornetneutrality.com that where you can sign an open letter to Congress, and it tells you how you can help promote this battle, and it lists some of the recent signers to the letter as Etsy, Tumblr, Foursquare, Namecheap, Postmates, you mentioned Boing Boing, and so a lot of well-known people joining the support, and looks like it's even Donna Brazile. But or someone with a picture with Donna Brazile. But anyway, any event. And of course, we have Alyssa Milano as well on the fight. So definitely take a look at the website. You can use it to contact your lawmakers. I won't hide anything here. I've always been a strong supporter of net neutrality, and I believe it's vital to a free and open internet. So I hope you'll take a look at that and can give it consideration, because, as we mentioned, there is a deadline, December 10th. And after that, it doesn't mean Congress can't repeal it afterwards, but this is just a process that would just freeze things in place until this can be resolved. Or actually, that would be the resolution, right?
It would restore the status quo after the 2015 rules are passed. So it's as if the vote at the FCC to repeal the rules never happened. So it puts the 2015 rules back on the book and freezes that in place.
And so I was debating this issue with a net neutrality critic. And, you know, he said the problem with the Obama process and also the Trump Ajit-Pai process is that basically for the next, 10, 12 years, we're just going to be engaging in net neutrality ping pong based on whoever's in the White House. And that wouldn't it make more sense to deal with this legislatively, work out a compromise, something that Democrats and Republicans can agree upon?
So I do think the ping pong argument is actually quite strange. So it's not as if previous administrations,
naturally. When the word ping pong comes up in a public policy debate, it's usually not a good thing.
Yeah, right. We've considered installing one at our Free Press office just to give the argument homage, but we decided against it. It is odd because other Republican-led FCCs, it's part of that decade-long process was those FCCs trying to find the right legal framework to promulgate net neutrality rules. So the idea that this is a partisan issue, or that there's going to be some endless back and forth between Democratic and Republican administrations, isn't actually borne out by the history of this issue. We advocated for Title II coverage of the net neutrality throughout that decade-long process, but it's not as if those Republican FCCs weren't trying, I think in a good faith effort to pass net neutrality rules. So the idea that this is going to go back and forth, until the end of time, I just don't think is right, especially given how strongly the public is interested in seeing these rules restored.
And I think, Harvey, you make a very important point. And it's something that is not reported well in this current debate. Up until now, the issue hasn't been net neutrality, yes or no. The issue has been net neutrality, yes, but how do we do it? It started with one of the most conservative FCC chairman, Powell, who made it as a voluntary, guidelines. And then you had Chairman Martin try to, enforce those involuntary guidelines with unsuccessfully, who was also a Republican FCC chair. And so that it's never been the debate about is net neutrality a good thing? The debate was how do we do it legally and how do we enforce it? What's changed dramatically about the current rules isn't that it's just repealing the Obama rules, but it's walking away from net neutrality itself. It's saying to ISPs, you don't have to adhere to these longstanding FCC principles that, even in essence, if you go back to the Pony Express days, there were rules that you can't prioritize one package over another. You have to treat them equally. And so you can now walk away from this longstanding practice as long as you disclose it. And
that
I think has not been reported well. I just think people just say, well, it's just repealing it. No, they're doing much more than that, and that's why this order is so radical.
That's entirely correct. It's not as if in 2015 the Wheeler-led FCC came up with this idea out of whole cloth. You know, as you mentioned, the history is there. The previous FCCs tried to pass net neutrality rules in some sort of legal structure, and twice those frameworks were struck down in court, not because the principles behind net neutrality are wrong, merely that the right authority, which Free Press has long argued, to do this kind of regulation is under Title II of the Communications Act, and the courts, in fact, instructed the FCC that if you want to promulgate these rules here, just do it under this right legal authority, and they'll be upheld, and that's exactly what happened at the D.C. Circuit. So, you know, like you said, the principle of non-discrimination in communications networks is a long-standing idea in the United States, as you've said, with the Pony Express example, and that's why, you know, Republican FCCs, Democratic FCCs have tried to, you know, work that rule for the internet era, and then finally in 2015 promulgated those rules under the right legal authority, and they were upheld. As you said, there's been no question about whether we should have net neutrality, just exactly the right legal framework to make sure it stays upheld in court.
So before we get to the main event of this whole battle, which is the D.C. Circuit case, have you ever had an interview where the issues of the Pony Express and ping pong came up?
No, this is my first Pony Express interview, so thank you. That's why I liked it.
So let's get to the real battle, which would be rendered moot if the Congressional Review Act procedure is successful, but the real battle that is, you know, kind of the World War II, so to speak, of net neutrality legal battle, since, you know, we had the successful fight in 2016 over the Obama rules, is in February, 23 state attorney generals and then a number of public interest groups, including Mozilla Foundation and your organization, Free Press, filed a case in the D.C. Circuit challenging the repeal order. And that's now being consolidated and briefed. You know, I think both you have presented your side's briefs. The SEC recently responded, and we're going to have arguments in February 2019. And give us a preview of where you think that case stands.
Yeah, that's all right. The FCC's argument is actually quite strange. I've used that word before, but, you know, once again, they are trying to read the word telecommunications out of the Communications Act. So the Communications Act contemplates two different kinds of services. Telecommunications service, that's the pathway, you know, for example, the pipes that you know, these ISPs lay for the internet, and the destinations, those websites, the actual information services is what it's called. And so the PI FCC has decided that because the pipes for the internet lead to websites, that they should also be classified under the same regulatory regime as websites. That is to say that the FCC has, you know, no regulatory authority over, you know, your website, you know, your podcast website, and so it should also not have any authority whatsoever to regulate ISPs. And it sounds strange because it is. In our brief, we've actually, you know, analogized to saying, you know, if you're a construction company that builds roads and you build a road to a hotel, let's call this hotelmozilla.com.
Okay.
There's rules for how, you know, roads need to be constructed. You know, speed limits, all that stuff. But this is as if the company building the road says, actually, because we are connecting you to a hotel, there shouldn't be any. The road is now also considered part of the hotel, so there should be no rules that apply to roads for this road. It's really the argument they're making, and which actually makes, you know, kind of the job relatively straightforward for us. The Communications Act contemplates the existence of telecommunications services. I think it's quite easy to demonstrate that the intent of Congress and the letter of the law was that the connection between endpoints of communications, destinations are in fact those telecommunication services, and the FCC was right to, you know, to call a spade a spade, to say that this is in fact, the ISPs are in fact telecommunication services. So it's, the argument is relatively straightforward, actually.
Let's put it maybe in a context. So the FCC is a is an independent agency that is governed by the Administrative Procedures Act, and that requires that whatever they do meet certain evidentiary standards. Is that correct?
That's right. They also have to, you know, conduct a reasoned decision-making process, and that's also one of the things that we've, you know, mentioned in our brief that the FCC has lacked. You know, this is really, it was promulgated perhaps, 2 years after the 2015 Open Internet Order, and the FCC wasn't able to demonstrate or to even come up with any evidence that would justify the reversal of those rules. And, you know, that is a legal standard that the commission itself has to meet under the APA. And I think we can, you know, quite easily demonstrate that, you know, there was no reasoned decision-making process here, that this was, you know, a fait accompli as the new commission was sworn in. And, you know, that's actually, you know, impermissible. There's quite a lot of latitude for these agencies, but they still have to kind of do their homework and justify their decision-making process. And that's something they really failed at in this repeal.
So they can't just say, hey, we're in power now, we don't like that, you know, bye-bye net neutrality. They have to, what is the standard they have to show?
There's a lot of latitude for these agencies. So that it's actually, you know, kind of funny. The courts are very, usually quite deferential to these agencies. You know, reasoned decision-making is one of the problems of, you know, the APA. You know, they have to read the law right, but, you know, they have to justify these kinds of decisions, and the court is usually happy to let them do it. But this FCC, you know, in our estimation, I think you'll see this borne out, just really made no effort to justify or come up with a reason why, you know, these rules weren't working, they were impracticable, there was anything wrong other than, you know, frankly, an ideological commitment to overturning these rules, and that is and not permissible under the APA, and I think you'll see the court agree.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and maybe it's an ad for Pony Express, maybe not, can't promise you, but when we come back, we'll have more on net neutrality after these messages. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report, only at webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Ready to do a podcast for your business? Make that podcast elevate to enterprise level. Let WebmasterRadio.fm expedite and execute your podcast to build your brand and broaden your customer base. WebmasterRadio.fm has worked with the world's biggest tech brands, Google, Yahoo, and Bing, and have worked with fast-growing brands like ShipStation and GoDaddy. Now it's your turn. Contact BRASCO at WMR.fm and rush your enterprise-level podcast into production at a very reasonable rate. Email BRASCO at WMR.fm.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. Top SEOs send you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let Top SEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
You have arrived
at the destination for education and entertainment.
WebmasterRadio.fm.
Because not everyone's last name is Gates.
WebmasterRadio.fm. We're everywhere.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on webmasterradio.fm.
And we're back, and we're talking to Guero Floria about the battle over net neutrality. And we're just talking about the FCC's briefing and the current showdown that's going to take place when the case is argued in February 2019, as 23 attorney generals and public interest groups are challenging the FCC order. And so it's... What is the basis, really, for them saying that they can repeal the order?
Sure. I mean, the principal ground for their reclassification, their repeal, is the FCC's view that even if broadband internet access services do nothing more than provide a telecommunications path to the edge providers, meaning, you know, websites and everything on the internet, that path itself qualifies as an information service. In other words, that it is under the same regulatory regime, that is to say, no regime, as destinations on the internet. And so if that sounds, you know, odd that the path is the same as the destination, it is, and that is quite literally the legal argument they are making. You know, they and in an effort to justify that, the FCC said, you know, the net neutrality rules had considerable social cost in foregone investment and innovation with no discernible incremental benefit relative to Title I classification, that is to say, the same classification in general that websites are under. And so, you know, as we said before the break, they have to justify that idea, that there was somehow considerable cost to having net neutrality, that there's no benefits to having internet access services under no regulation versus under a net neutrality regime. And I just think that's a burden that it's a relatively low burden that the courts have set up, but it's a burden they cannot meet. There is no evidence for those claims, and I think you'll see that borne out in the court case and arguments.
And who are the judges that you've been assigned?
I will have to look. I don't have that on my hand. Sorry.
Well, there was one judge who ruled on the first two cases, and I was wondering whether he was going to be part of the panel.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just don't have that.
That's okay. That's fine. Back to the Pony Express. No. So, in terms of timeline, you know, this could be argued in February, but a decision may not happen until May, probably, right?
That is right. So they're going to, you know, ruminate on these arguments for a time, and I think mid-May, mid-summer is you know, the likely timeline for when we're going to get a decision. You know, what happens behind the closed doors of court is mysterious, but I think that is kind of the likely pace at which these cases are decided.
And in this process, there is what is known as amicus briefs, where friends of the court brief, where outside parties submit briefs and to support one side or the other. Who are some of the notable amici who have joined your cause?
Oh, sure. So you know, the Internet Association for one, which is a collection of, you know, some of the biggest edge provider services on the internet. You know, a lot of these, you know, websites, other public interest groups that, you know, weren't on, you know, principal party to the case, but have also, you know, people that represent the public. I believe members of Congress have also written in to, you know, people that were there at the passage of the Communications Act, saying that, in fact, this is how we intended the law passed in 1996 to operate. We fully contemplated, even in 1996, the existence of internet access, even cable internet access. It was a forward-looking piece of legislation, you know, writing in to say this is in fact how we intended the law to work, and this repeal by the FCC has no basis in what we intended to pass and no basis in the text of the act itself.
Now, there's a couple of controversies currently surrounding FCC Chairman Entrepai. And one is, for lack of a better term, comment gate, or fake comment gate, I guess.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what happened with respect to, apparently there were you know, over a million, those, I don't remember the exact number, how many million comments were filed in response to the proposed repeal. And 21 million comments were submitted, and it turns out that many of them appear to have been fraudulently submitted. What do we know about that now?
Sure. So the AGs of both DC and New York have launched investigations. You know, issued quite a few subpoenas, actually, of organizations that were submitting comments. They are trying to figure out where all these fake comments came from. I think the numbers are something like perhaps 9 million fraudulent comments. In New York, the AG has said, you know, ordinary people's names, just from, you know, names out of the phone book, were used to submit comments to the FCC. You know, millions of those people have said, you know, didn't know anything about this proceeding. I've certainly not issued comments. So there's a real identity theft issue, and I think quite importantly, you know, a corruption of the democratic process. It is really important for the public to have confidence in, you know, being able to participate in these proceedings. And if, you know, there's an entity out there dumping literally, you know, some close to 10 million fake comments, it's an attack on the way you know, these agencies are meant to be responsive to the public. It's a way to say, oh, you know, these comments are fake, we don't have to listen to them. And that's really, you know, harmful for our ability to be able to participate in these really important proceedings that affect how, you know, how these services are governed in this country.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess that the fake comments were in favor of repeal.
That is true. There were just, you know, millions upon millions of, you know, fake comments that are being investigated, like you said, in favor of getting rid of the rule.
And there's no idea where this came from.
Yeah, well, so, you know, I don't know what these AGs know, but, you know, there are subpoenas out there, and I you know, believe they'll get to the bottom of it. But, you know, they certainly came from somewhere, and there's questions about, you know, who did it, who paid for it, real questions about, you know, kind of maintaining the integrity of a really important part of the democratic process.
Now, there's another issue involving this comment process. And at one point, Ajit Pai claimed that there was a DNS attack on the FCC that led to, you know, comments shutting down. And that apparently was false. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, sure. So you know, John Oliver on his show had a segment about net neutrality during the FCC's process, directed his followers to go to the site, issue comments, and that segment itself became quite popular. So more and more people were trying to comment the FCC's process. That took down the FCC's comment portal site. So the FCC decided to claim that there was a denial of service attack. They said this was in fact an attack on the comment process. Someone was trying to take it down, and what it meant is that ordinary people that were kind of animated by the public airing of what was going on at the FCC weren't able to comment at all. And like you said, that had no basis in fact. The Chairman Pai kind of had to admit that they were wrong. That the FCC was mistaken and that there was, in fact, a denial of service attack. It was really just a crush of comments that came through in favor of maintaining the 2015 rules. So right now, that issue is kind of put to rest only because, you know, there's no one out there able to ask Chairman Pai the right questions. But my guess is during what I'm sure will be some really interesting oversight hearings in the next Congress, it would not surprise me to see this issue brought up again.
And one other thing that may come up in one of those hearings is the FCC regularly collects data on broadband speeds in America. And in the past, there was an annual report by the FCC on where we stood on that, because one of the missions of the FCC is to promote broadband adoption. Ajit Pai has not done that. He's been not releasing this data. And is that because the data is not good?
And you know, the FCC under this administration is not releasing reports, as you said, not releasing the broadband speed information. And you know, I think because this is a very, you know, politically driven FCC, and if Chairman Pai thinks those numbers don't look good for him, he's going to, you know, quash those kinds of reports. And like you said, that's the kind of activity that, you know, a house that's interested in investigating these kinds of issues is going to have to uncover and get out there. Previously, you know, I think the Pai FCC tried to revise, you know, some numbers like that, saying that more people had access to broadband because they lowered the threshold for what is considered broadband. All these kinds of political games of goosing the numbers, these issues keep piling up at Chairman Pai's FCC, and I think there is a lot of room to thoroughly investigate, you know, what exactly is going on at the commission right now.
So we have a link to Guar's the website for Free Press, as well as Guar's Twitter account. If you want more information about Guar from Free Press, I do have one question about your bio. You indicate you like getting fresh air riding your bike to and from one of DC's many roof decks. What are your favorite roof decks?
Oh, you know, what is nice about this town is it's hot 90% of the time. Well, in the summer at least. Yeah. Every now and then you catch a cool breeze up there, and it is very, very nice. So it's a good respite from not just sweating on the sidewalk. You get a little breeze in your face when you're on one of these rooftops, and it's really pleasant.
What's one of your favorites?
There's a place, 1905 9th Street. It's a little taco place. It's got a roof deck. It is really nice.
Okay, and there's some famous ones. I know there's you know, the now what used to be Hotel Washington, now the W, which overlooks the White House. And
oh, it's a beautiful one, definitely.
And I like Perry's and Adams Morgan. I don't know if that's still there. But
some beautiful string lights and sushi up there. It's a really nice place.
And a very fun part of town. So I want to thank you for joining us. Everyone, please take a look at Free Press at freepress.net. In addition, check out Where We Stand on the Internet-Wide Day of Action. You can go to deadlinefornetneutrality.com. And what's the website for Battle for the Internet?
Battle for the Net as well. If you just Google that, you'll get right to it.
Battle for the Net will take you to the Free Press site and tell you more about what you can do. And check out internetlawcenter.net. That's our law firm. We're a full-service internet law firm. And just a reminder, we'll be back next week with another show, but in 3 weeks will be our year-end heroes and zeros. And who knows, last year's top zero was Ajit Pai. See who this year's top zero will be. And so this is Bennett Kelly. I want to thank Guara for joining us again. And tune in next week to another edition of CyberLaw and Business Report. And check us out on Twitter at CyberLaw Radio. Have a great week, everyone.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.